Jay Mariotti joins me every Wednesday night on this here show. It's the only place you can hear him, and we are incredibly fortunate to have his contributions on the show every Wednesday night. Mr. Mariotti, out at his home in California. How are you tonight, sir?
Dino, how's life?
Jay, I talked about it during the first hour. I'm getting more pissed off, more frustrated, and more annoyed with each passing day. I'm sick of this, and I know that we haven't even hit close to peak yet. But I'm sick of it in the way that it's affected everyday life. Forget about my own life, everyone else's life, the entire country. Nothing is the same. Nothing is normal. It's getting me really pissed off.
Well, I'm going to issue my disclaimer, okay? I'm a political neutralist when it comes to my podcast and my appearances with you. I don't usually go down the Trump road, but I must tonight. Do you know this president is even more delusional than I thought? He is acting like some crazed army general or maybe some desperate football coach. This man thinks America should reopen for business and the people should resume more normal lives in, 2.5 weeks? He is in a horrific state of denial about the ravages of this virus. I think he's inviting a death wish of massive proportions. Does this man not realize we're in a life-changing moment in history? We're in lockdown. Aren't we more likely to look like maybe Italy around Easter time than a country ready to rebound and live again?
Yeah.
Simple common sense says that any premature resumption of American life amid this all-time pandemic, the curve is not flattened, could lead to untold numbers of fatalities. I have two eyes. You have two ears. We know that there's not going to be any meaningful breakthrough until we have a legitimate vaccine. But Trump is prioritizing his economy and his GNP over human lives, and he's willing to sacrifice, I believe, the elderly who cannot afford special medical care, and maybe some of these young idiots out there who ignore social distancing. In the end, I think class privilege will reign, and the haves will survive, and the have-nots will rot away. Yeah, let's go ahead and reopen offices, Dino, and restaurants, and then ignore these dead bodies outside a hospital that didn't have the tests or the respirators to provide treatment. I think a middle ground approach is more sensible here. Don't we save the economy by first saving lives? And then worse than that, Dino, Trump gets the idea from some Fox News commentator who says the other night, don't let the cure be worse than the problem itself. Magically, 3 hours later, Trump is tweeting that very comment, meaning this guy on Fox seems to be running the country, Steve Hilton. Why not let Paris Hilton run the country? So I don't know. I mean, I'm as sick of it as you, but I don't. You know, what's that? Good is that going to do us? I think we're sitting here for months, and we can forget about sports.
Oh,
finally, the Olympics came around.
Yeah,
sports is completely insignificant. I just cannot believe this man wants to reopen the country at Easter time. As he asked the Easter Bunny about this.
Well,
if the Easter Bunny wants to go back to work on April the 12th.
Jay, I think we'd like to see the country go back to normal in the next 10 minutes. But, and again, I've got serious questions about so much about this virus that have come into my mind over the last couple of days. And I've had some guests on prior to yourself this week who have going into great detail about some of the agendas that might be a part of this whole thing and what it really means in the end. But as far as Trump, I heard a doctor today say that as of Monday of next week, I heard him say this on the radio today, that as of Monday of next week, this country will be the most infected virus country in the entire world. And so, by the way, I jumped all over Trump. When was it? Well, first show this week when he went after I've got no allegiance to this Peter Alexander, this NBC reporter in the White House press room when he jumped on him when Alexander asked him nothing more than reasonable and relevant questions. The question that really sparked the whole thing was when Alexander said to Trump, he said, what do you say to millions of people around the country who are worried about this and are fearful and, they got panic and dread? And Trump jumped all over the fucking guy and said, I'd say you're a bad reporter. What the fuck are you talking about? The man is asking you a relevant question that is on the minds of people all over this country. Now, I would like to see the country go back to normal in the next 10 minutes, as I said. But Trump with this, you talk about giving a false sense of security and hope. I want to see liftoff for this country back by fucking Easter? Is this guy out of his fucking mind?
Well, he's intimidating the media the way we've seen football coaches do it through time. This is his MO, his modus operandi, and he doesn't want the real difficult questions to be asked, such as, why, President Trump, did you say only a few days ago that you agree that we need at least two or three more months of physical distancing, and we cannot even think about coming back as a country until the summer months? And why, oh, why did you suddenly pull yet another 180 at the worst possible time? Now you're endangering lives by saying, yep, we're going to be back and running, and let's go, America. As Trump looked at New York City, this is like the scene out of the Will Smith movie where it's the apocalypse, and Will Smith is walking through New York City. That we're almost to that point in New York City, yet he's going to send people back to work in New York City, including my daughter who works in New York. Are you crazy, man? Where are you coming from? See, he flies by the seat of his pants. This is not only a referendum for him. We're talking about leadership in history. He is being compared to men who have, in times of crisis, Dino, you know, accorded themselves well. John F. Kennedy, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, Winston Churchill, go on and on. What exactly are we watching here? This is an all-time debacle. I don't even think I have the words for it. I'm underplaying what we're watching here. And yet, you know, people are thinking, well, what's the alternative? The other day, I see Joe Biden pop up on a video for the first time in weeks, and he can't even read the teleprompter correctly, and he's waving his hand like, what's going on here? Move the teleprompter. That's the alternative?
Yeah. So,
I mean, we're at a state now where this is beyond the theater of the absurd, and we are sitting in a crisis period, an all-time crisis period, as a nation, as a planet Earth, and this ding-a-ling is making the calls, and I have no idea what he's going to say from day to day to day. But once upon a time, Dino, I kind of found some humor in his press conferences. Now, of course, he might be riding all of us down death row.
Yeah, I said in the first hour today, Jay, I said that, I you know, whenever I hear him talk of late, and I voted for him, and I'm going to vote for him again, given the lack of alternatives that I see out there, but I can't listen to him for more than 30 seconds. I want to punch him in the face because he just disgusts me. Now, what about the young people, Jay, in this country as well? I mean, they went on, these college kids down in Florida, right? They went on with spring break. Everything's fine and dandy. We're not in danger of this kind of shit. And then they get back home, and several of these people have tested the positive for the virus.
Well, it's disgusting. And some of that happened out here, Dino. I mean, one of the reasons Gavin Newsom, the governor of California, and the L.A. mayor, Eric Garcetti, laid down their restrictions in even bigger ways is because the crowded beach scenes in L.A. You have a shelter-in-place in order, and shamefully, you see these idiots out there partying. And Florida, this governor, Ron DeSantis, so slow to the switch, he finally gets it together, yet he won't order a complete lockdown. The Miami Beach mayor had to say, look at these clowns partying on South Beach. I have to stop this, even though the governor will not. So we have this disconnect, Dino, in government. Trump says this. Newsom says this. Cuomo, who is according himself well, I think, at the moment, says this. The clown in Florida says this. And then we have parts of the country that really don't have that many cases at all. So Trump is looking at his voting constituencies in those states and saying they can go back to work. But what about the people in New York City, ravaged New York City? And what about the people in L.A., where we're supposed to be having a New York City-type massacre over the next 2 weeks? We haven't had ours yet out here, although sitting here in quarantine, I certainly feel like we're in the middle of a crisis. So these young people were enabled for whatever reason. In the beginning, Trump downplaying this, and then once the initial reports came out, oh, this only affects the elderly. We can't die from it. We may catch it, but we'll get rid of it in 2 weeks. It created this Rudy Gobertism. If you recall, Rudy Gobert is the one who was teasing his teammates and mocking the whole idea of the coronavirus. And then lo and behold, a couple of days later, he gets it and pretty much becomes the flashpoint for the shutdown of sports in America and throughout the world. Rudy Gobert, who was mocking it 2 days earlier, and he's in his 20s. So I think there was some misinformation in the beginning. We obviously, as a nation, did not react to this quickly enough. The president did not, our government did not, nobody reacted quickly enough. Are we about to become the next Italy? I think that's what you're suggesting here, that you're reading that we're going to become worse than Italy. Well, Italy has not recovered. And, you know, there are reports that China has recovered. I don't believe anything out of China. I might believe South Korea, but it's a much smaller country than what Trump has to deal with. So Easter Sunday comes, and Trump said the other day, I want to see all the churches packed. Really? So social distancing, 6 feet, we're down to 6 inches apart in pews? And what is he talking about? I'm frightened, you know, for what's coming.
It's Mariotti, 13 minutes after the hour, hour number two. Jay joins me every Wednesday. I got a question, comment, suggestion for Jay, Dino, TalkUSA, at gmail.com. We have had one come across already. I'll get to it eventually before the hour is out. So the Olympics shuts down, Jay, the last shoe to fall, so to speak. And I said 2 weeks ago to my audience on this show, and I think I brought it up with you in one of our more recent conversations over the last couple of weeks, that I said, forget about sports, all sports, for the calendar year of 20, unless something seismic and unexpected happens. Forget about sports. No NBA, no NHL, no NFL, no college sports, none of that shit, at least for the 2020 calendar year. And then the Olympics shuts down, as we saw in the last 24 hours, 48 hours. But here, just speaking of the NBA, Jay, here's Mark Cuban, the owner of the Mavericks. He's talking about the NBA returning in May. Does Mark Cuban know something you or I or Trump doesn't know?
He's very much like Trump. He's a wishful thinker and only thinking about one thing, money, 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 money. That's where Cuban and Trump have much in common. Cuban's out of his mind. He's thinking about his own business. He's very selfish. I think, Dino, in the last couple of days, sports in general starting to realize this is a multi-month haul. And at the very earliest, we should be thinking about the fall, and even that, you know, I think is absurd. As I said earlier, we need a vaccine, and then that vaccine has to be proven as safe, and then it has to be distributed to the masses, and then we go through the politics of who gets it and who doesn't. Oh, yeah, the athletes will get it immediately, just like we're seeing professional athletes, you know, getting the tests before seriously ill people get the coronavirus tests. I'm reading tonight that Noah Syndergaard needs Tommy John surgery, and he's going to be cleared for surgery in Florida, where elective surgeries otherwise are being discouraged, if not banned, and yet Noah Syndergaard can get that arm fixed tomorrow when somebody might need that hospital bed who has the coronavirus. I mean, this is what I'm talking about. The privilege of sports is disgusting, but Dino, I do think they're starting to get it. Since we last talked, Goodell figured out, yeah, I don't really think I can be hugging players on draft night, so we're going to do this in a studio instead. That's not a good idea. Now we're seeing general managers come out and say, this isn't fair. We need to judge these people in person. We're spending millions of dollars on these prospects. What if we make a mistake and lose our jobs? Because you and ESPN and ABC and Fox need some programming in the month of April. So I think eventually, Dino, they will postpone that. The NFL now, we're starting to hear they're concerned about the start of their season. And once the NFL, the almighty NFL, is concerned, then you've got Adam Silver there sitting there wondering if he's going to, you know, be paying the players after April the 15th. And you've also seen how the Australian League tried to start its championship without fans in the stands, and then players realized they were in the middle of the series this week, you know, and realized, wait a minute, this guy's relatives are sick, they have the coronavirus, how am I going to be guarding him in a basketball game as I'm dripping sweat, just as we saw with the at least 10 NBA players who have contracted the virus. You have all of these concerns about the NBA, the last sport, basketball, that should be going back. and playing with all of these concerns about the coronavirus and how many players have it. You're going to go out and have these guys drip sweat all over each other as soon as July. I think Silver is starting to get it. I believe that Major League Baseball actually is behaving pretty responsibly. They are cutting deals for their players to be paid at least through May, and I'm not seeing anybody but Scott Boras, the agent, offer up lunatic comments such as, yeah, we'll start a 162-game season in July. Shut up, Scott. Count your money. Don't be making these ludicrous comments. Baseball is not going to start in July. And roundabout way here, Dino, I agree with you. I think it's absurd to think that sports can come back. If anything, maybe the NBA, if it wanted in November, to maybe have a Final Four-type finals, start its season belatedly the next season in December, you could do that. But in general, once the Olympics pulled the plug, I think all of these sports commissioners and owners should realize we're here for the long haul and sit back and try to figure it out, but you're not going to be playing organized sports anytime soon.
Jay, I don't have a subscription to The Athletic. We've talked about them a number of different times here over the last couple of weeks, and of course they've got millions of dollars invested in that company, and they employ so many writers and columnists, and I'm wondering if you've taken note over the last, last week since we talked, how they're covering the world of sports, and are they covering the coronavirus? Are they having a mixture of the two? If you know, do you know?
Yeah, I've been reading it. I read quite a bit because I'm quarantined, so I'm reading more than I ever do, really. And I can tell you that there are talented people there, and they do have a certain amount of coronavirus coverage, and I'm happy for that. But I'm also seeing a lot of fanboy stuff, and that's not just there. It's ESPN. It's all over sports talk radio. There seems to be more of an attempt to keep this fairy tale of sports going and alive and well, which I'm sure all the leagues appreciate. But, guys, we're in the middle of one of the great crises of our lives, all of us, whether you're 75, 50, 20. This is an all-time crisis, and I don't want to read a bunch of stories. This is the greatest game I've ever seen. I saw about 15 of those on The Athletic site, and I wanted to cringe. I know they have to offer content to their subscribers, can't get that out, but I also realize that they're in danger of reducing themselves as something very irrelevant and niche when we're looking for journalists to step up and cover the coronavirus. So talk radio in LA this week, Dino, I actually heard one station here make a big deal out of how the LA Rams changed their logo.
Yeah.
And it created a ruckus, and they devoted hours to this topic. Dan Patrick, the great Dan Patrick, had Eric Dickerson on the other day talking about how Dickerson is pissed off at the LA Rams logo.
I just
want to cringe.
Yeah.
You've got people dying in Los Angeles, all over the world, all over the United States, and Eric Dickerson goes on the Dan Patrick show to talk about how he hates the Rams logo. That is tone deafness at its worst, and the sports media, it baffles me why they just simply can't. Some editor there can't say, we can really make ourselves look good and smart if we smother this coverage. Why don't we go at it? We are journalists. We are writers. Nope. They go the other way. They minimize their audience. They try to protect whatever audience they have. And in the process, they're going to lose a lot of respect among their readership.
All right. We've got an email that I want to get you. It's from Craig in Sacramento, California. And Jay, he thinks you go too far. You ready for the email?
Shoot.
All right. Says, Dino, I think that Jay is coming across as incredibly self-righteous and pious about sports coverage in the wake of the coronavirus. Unless you're a superficial moron, everyone, and he capitalizes the word everyone, everyone knows that sports is meaningless when compared to real life. The toy store of life, as you correctly point out. However, that doesn't mean that I should feel guilty about deriving some pleasure from it, especially now more than ever. I, for one, am glad that I can turn on ESPN or Sirius NFL Radio and listen to a little free agency and draft talk. Even if, for a fleeting moment, it distracts me from fucking coronavirus, social distancing, 56% infection statistics, people dying, and worrying about my family for even 5 minutes, then I'm grateful for it. Mariotti is acting like the media should be ashamed to so much as reference anything other than COVID-19. It's sufficiently depressing and scary enough already. I could tell after his diatribe last week, you almost felt guilty about asking him about the Tom Brady. Your response, Jay?
ESPN has 6 or 7 channels. I'm sure they can devote one of them to NFL draft coverage, but it doesn't have to be the blowtorch ESPN. Why not put it on ESPN2 or one of their other channels? What you're doing is telling your audience, in a crisis, we are just this insignificant network that where we don't care about journalism anymore, where we once did, and we're just going to stick to sports. We talked about this last week, Dino. When we were in the woke discussion, the Jemele Hill, the Michael Smith, Colin Kaepernick, that was significantly different, something entirely different than what we're dealing with now, a global pandemic. And I think instead of it being political in the Jemele Hill situation, I think now we're just fighting for our lives. It would be great to see all the great journalists at ESPN, at The Athletic, go into coronavirus coverage, deeply into it, because I think you would find out, Fred, in Sacramento, that these are very talented journalists. I think they're being restricted by their companies, in particular ESPN, which has a mandate now, stick to sports. Well, that should not apply to the coronavirus. Yes, Colin Kaepernick and all of that, yeah, I agreed with that. Thank God John Skipper is out of there and they have a new president. But this president should have adjusted and said, Jeremy Schapp, you're great. Don Van Natta, you're great. Dan Le Batard, let's get you out of that stupid mode you're in Miami and be the great columnist you are. Why can't I see great commentators and columnists commenting on what they're going through? These are familiar faces for you, Dino, Fred, me. I would love to see how, John Butchigross is dealing with the coronavirus, and instead of giving his stupid, witty cracks about sports in the middle of a health crisis. This is what I'm talking about. These are human beings. These are professionals. Let them tell us what they're feeling. Familiar faces. Everybody needs a friend at this time. And I'm sorry, I don't want to watch goofy highlights from 6 months ago, bloopers or whatever they're putting on now. Doesn't cut it for me. I'm smarter than that. I think Fred sounds like he's a smart guy. And what I'm saying is, let's not just completely detach from it. You've got all these different channels. Cover the coronavirus, too.
What about deriving, though, as a deviation from the awful news, Jay, about deriving some pleasure from sports coverage, get my mind off things, NFL free agency, that kind of stuff? I mean,
go for it.
Okay.
I mean, there you go. I just turn on ESPN2 and trot out all your football analysts, and SiriusXM can do it too. They've got all these channels. I don't think these people on high think. I think they get a directive from corporate, stick to sports. Yes, sir. Come on. You're marginalizing your own audience. You're doing your own company a disservice. I understand Disney wants ABC News to cover this. But to just tell ESPN, I'm sure if you had Jeremy Schapp on one night, he would rail on this, because this is his bread and butter in life. I am a reporter, and when we're going through an all-time crisis, you're asking him to what at this point? What exactly is he doing, and your other great reporters there? Well, ESPN is no longer a journalistic unit. That's the problem, and I think in due time, all of their journalists will be fired. Same for The Athletic, same for any of these places. It's a hard thing for me, Dino, somebody who loves sports as much as anybody and has devoted his livelihood to it, to sit here in the middle of what we're going through and read through this ESPN scroll about some of these stories I'm reading. The one thing that caught my eye today that applied was Carl Anthony Towns of the Timberwolves in a very poignant, emotional tear letting about his mother, who is in a coma because of the coronavirus. That was what I'm looking for at this point in my life.
All right, 27 after the hour. Jay Mariotti with me for the hour. More emails to Jay, questions, comments, suggestions, all that stuff. DinoTalkUSA@gmail.com. So if we stick with the area of sports and some of the things that are going to potentially manifest themselves over the next couple of weeks and months, Jay, one of the things that I've been thinking about, and some things have been written about this, is in terms of contractual relationships between leagues, individual franchises, and their employees, being the players, in terms of, you know, how this is going to affect things, and are they going to get paid? Are there provisions within the text of contracts which take the individual franchises off the hook for many of these salaried employees, making multi-millions of dollars in many cases, and not that to say nothing of how this adversely or doesn't affect the collective bargaining agreement with one respective league or the other, depending upon which one you're talking about, and service time as well, right? In terms of, like, for instance, you mentioned Noah Syndergaard a couple of minutes ago, getting the surgery, and your thoughts on that. Well, Syndergaard was going into the second of his last year of his contract. 2021 was to be his walk year. So do the Mets get two more years of Syndergaard as they thought they had going into this year or not? There's a lot of tentacles, a lot of very puzzling things and complicated things in regard to all of this. And I think that we're going to see more chatter about this as you know, time moves along here in the next couple of weeks.
I think the NBA is the biggest problem at the moment because they were approaching the playoffs, and that's where they make their money. They're a $9 billion a year league, and they make most of that money in the months of April, May, and June. And here we are. We're looking at it at the end of an NBA season. Therefore, you have to look at their doomsday provision that was negotiated into the collective bargaining agreement, and the NBA can stop paying players. They have agreed to pay full salaries through April the 1st, but after that, nobody has any idea what's going to happen. And you have to think about this, Dito. If the NBA can't deliver its full complement of content to its network partners, ABC, ESPN, Turner, which have paid billions for that content, especially the playoffs, then the NBA is not going to get that money. And therefore, the NBA already taking a hit this year with Daryl Morey's unfortunate comment about Hong Kong, which cut off millions from China long before this coronavirus crisis. The NBA has had a very difficult financial year. It's going to affect the salary cap whenever that might come into play in a significant way. So I don't think it's beyond the realm that we see in the near future a big battle between the owners and the players about whether they will continue to be paid if we're not having the playoffs. And I think that's why Adam Silver is going to be very careful how he frames his decision coming up, and it's got to come up before long. Can he continue to, quote-unquote, suspend the season? At some point, people are going to go, suspend what season? He needs to be very careful here, too, because of the health situation I told you about, Carl Anthony Towns and his mother, but what about the 10 players, at least, that have tested positive, including two L.A. Lakers, Rudy Gobert, Donovan Mitchell, the Detroit Piston, Christian Wood. Those three players played in the same game together, as we talked last week. How many other NBA players have the coronavirus that we don't know about? A league, obviously, a league where players are up close and personal, guarding each other every minute of every game, you're actually going to resume play. I think it's very unrealistic. So, Dino, I think look at the NBA for your first possible war here. And you guys got guys like Cuban who do not want to probably pay the players. And you're going to have a union get involved. And I think all hell might break loose in the NBA.
So we talked earlier this week, Jay, you and I over the phone, and we talked a little bit about the Brady situation and the fallout from that. We talked about it a little bit last week, but with Brady going to Tampa and then some of the comments that have been made by Kraft, which are kind of indirect in the way that Kraft subtly kind of, I guess, blames Belichick for Brady leaving. And you like to think that Brady has a better chance of doing better and rewriting some history in Tampa than Belichick does on his own now that Brady's not a part of the New England situation.
Yeah, because I think, Dino, Belichick is going to try to create the next Tom Brady. I mean, this man's a mad scientist, and he thinks he's going to go into the lab, and he's going to turn Jarrett Stidham into Tom Brady. Remember Stidham? He wasn't a sixth-round pick like Brady, but he wasn't a first-rounder. I think Belichick is going to try to prove to the world that I created Tom Brady, and I'll create Jarrett Stidham. And that's what he's going to do. You know how long that's going to take? They cut their kicker, Gostkowski. They seem to be in a bit of a rebuild. I would never say that entirely about the Patriots, but if you're going to go with a unproven quarterback, we have no idea if he's any good or not, and you're going to go into battle with him, yes. I like Brady's chances in these 2 years he's signed for, and that's going to be it. 2 years, $50 million. I like his chances of getting more accomplished in Tampa with Mike Evans and great weapons and a good defense and a fun coach in Arians. And I think Arians and that organization, the GM Jason Light, they will let Brady do everything he can to bring his culture, the Brady culture, the TB12 culture that Belichick was resisting for so long. They're going to invite it. Alex Guerrero, come on in, Brady's personal trainer.
Yeah.
Do what you want to do here. You're welcome to fly with us, anything you want. And I think they have a shot of at least making the playoffs. And I'm not sure I can say that even about the great Bill Belichick and the Patriots as constituted.
Well, if we do have an NFL season, the relevancy that the Buccaneers franchise has taken on is you know, at this point, sky high, and that's, I mean, to think if we do have an NFL season, when and if a television schedule is released, it's going to be interesting to see how many times the Buccaneers are going to be on primetime national television, which is probably going to far exceed in one single season all the times they've been on national television in the last 4 or 5 years. But it's still, listen, I'm fascinated by it if we ever get to the point where we see Brady take the field in a Buccaneers uniform. And then again, you throw in the virus situation and what it could prevent, what it's prevented up to this point in time. Jay, Brady may never fulfill the first year of that contract, and so that knocks him back another peg in terms of, you know, the calendar and his age and so on and so forth. And then the question is, you know, what does that do to Brady in terms of, you know, his skills slipping a little bit? And so we'll find out when and if we get to that point. But Brady still in a Tampa Bay Buccaneers uniform, and I talked about this on the show last week, and I brought up some of the names in the past, you know, Bobby Orr skating on one leg in his last couple of years with the Blackhawks, and Jordan with the Wizards, and I mean, you can go down the list, but Favre with the Jets and then the Vikings, and Johnny Yu finishing out his career with the San Diego Chargers with the lightning bolt on the helmet. It's going to look really, really bizarre. In fact, you've seen some of the photoshopped images, I'm sure, of Brady in a Buccaneers uniform online. It's really a weird look, man.
Yeah, it's as surreal as it gets, and in a sports perspective, it fits in with what we're dealing with. If you had told me 10 years ago Tom Brady would be a Tampa Bay Buccaneers, a Tampa Bay Buccaneer in this country would be going through a global pandemic, I go, wow. I can't get past that faux pirate ship. He's going to run onto the field past a faux pirate ship in Tampa, Florida. Yet, from what I understand, it didn't take much. There weren't many options for him. Remember, Tennessee said no. Everybody thought that was going to be it. All of a sudden, his options shriveled up. There were only two out here, the Chargers and Tampa Bay, and Brady does have a son from a previous relationship who lives in New York. His family is now settled outside of New York City in Connecticut, so it if you're looking at proximity, I buy that. It's a much shorter flight, Tampa to the New York area, than coming to L.A. and flying that madness every week, and I'm sure it'll, after a game, he'll be hitting New York. That's what Brady has agreed to. I'm sure the Bucs have agreed to that as well. But, you know, Dino, it's pretty clear here that he grew sick of Belichick. Belichick grew sick of him. Belichick, being such a power freak, could not handle Alex Guerrero being around. They were having a tug of war for power. Kraft sort of sat there, watched over it. Kind of reminded me a little of the Bulls dynasty when you had Jordan and Phil Jackson and Pippen over here, and you had Reinsdorf and Krause over here, and these guys didn't get along with Krause, and Krause tried to downplay what Michael Jordan meant to the Bulls. There was a little bit of that. it's almost a miracle that they lasted 20 years together. I credit Brady for sticking it out that long. Remember, Dino, year after year, Brady would sacrifice money in his contract so Belichick and Kraft could create weapons around him and buy defensive players and so on. Everybody forgets that Brady last year was the number 12 paid quarterback in the NFL per year average. It was absurd he had to deal with that. Also, never forget this, the state of Florida has no income tax. California has a massive income tax. I know that. Brady's going down there, no income tax. There were a lot of reasons why this makes sense. I bet he would have ended up in Tennessee, and I could have seen Tannehill ending up in New England. But now you've got Brady here. Apparently Belichick doesn't want Dalton. He certainly doesn't want Winston. I don't think Cam Newton's his kind of guy. So, ladies and gentlemen, meet Jarrett Stidham.
Well, you know, speaking of players that ended up their careers in foreign-looking uniforms, and you covered Jordan for so many years, and I want to get to his last couple of years with the Wizards. But before I do that, in relation to what we've been speaking about here in terms of the Patriots situation and some of the remarks that Kraft has made concerning, you know, those subtle shots that he's taken, but you can see right through them that they're directed in the area of Belichick. I'm really kind of surprised, Jay, that Belichick, and maybe he has behind closed doors, and maybe we don't know about it, but if I'm Belichick and I hear, you know, some of the ways that Kraft is talking publicly, and the inference is that I'm to blame for Belichick, for Brady walking out the door, and if you don't, you know, I think if I'm Belichick, I walk into Kraft's office maybe and I say, Bob, listen, if you don't like the decision that I made, you know, the exit door is there, pay me off my salary, let me go. I'm really surprised that Belichick doesn't do that, given, you know, his success, his enormous pride, his stature in New England, and as arguably the best NFL coach of the last 50 years.
Well, Brady's legacy, Belichick's legacy are intact, you know, but there are shoelaces to tie at the end of this shoe, and that's what they're going to do. Belichick is pushing 70. This is a man who cannot tolerate losing. He is going to lose. They are not going to go back to the Super Bowl with Jarrett Stidham. So how will he handle losing, possibly not going to the playoffs? I know that sounds unfathomable, but I think that's very possible. And Belichick, if he is known as the guy who chased away Brady, and then that was it for Belichick, and then he retires, that's not going to be a good look at the end. And if Brady goes to Tampa and turns into Joe Namath limping around, or, God forbid, Y.A. Tittle. You know, a lot of young people don't know who Y.A. Tittle is. Google Y.A. Tittle. You'll see this picture of a guy with his helmet off, balding, with blood pouring out of his scalp.
Yeah.
That was his final game. A fine quarterback for the New York Giants. Stayed too long. Joe Namath, painful. Stayed too long. L.A. Rams at the end. Joe Montana didn't stay too long. He actually, you know, made the playoffs with the Chiefs. It wasn't ignominious. I don't think Tom Brady will have an ignominious ending.
I don't either.
Because I think Bruce Arians will make it at least an adequate ending. But they're not going to win a Super Bowl either or come close. So, it's, as we said last week, it's sad it ended this way. As I often said in Chicago during the Jordan dynasty, when all they did was feud, I always wondered why the owner didn't call a Yalta conference and try to build a bridge between the parties, but Reinsdorf allowed all of that to bleed, and Kraft let it bleed. Here's his comment, by the way, that you referenced to the NFL Network, Bob Kraft.
Right.
Quote, think about loving your wife, and for whatever reason, there's something, her father or mother, that makes life impossible for you, and you have to move on, but you don't want to, end quote. He's basically comparing Belichick to somebody's mother-in-law.
Right. Right.
Yeah, I hear where you're coming from. If I'm Belichick, I'm a little piqued by that. But if I'm Belichick, I'm also going, I have Tom out of here. I have Alex Guerrero out of here. And now I have my New England Patriots back. So he's only got a couple more years himself. It'll be fascinating if indeed we see the soap opera, how it shakes out in both places.
All right, before I get to the Jordan comments that I want to get from you concerning his last couple of years, his departure from Chicago and then on to the Washington Wizards, another email from George. Jay, Dino, I'd like to hear Jay's opinion on the following. Do these teams realize that if, when they do resume sports, that there will not be sold-out venues? Not even close. People are taking huge financial hits right now and won't have money to take their family to a professional sporting event. I really hope these leagues aren't tone deaf and respect their fans, their customers, and start arguing about million-dollar salaries while people are fighting to pay their bills. Secondly, he mentions, Jay, if this pandemic lasts through the summer, these professional leagues will have to reset their entire pricing system. This means these player contracts will need to be reworked. Otherwise, no one's going to show up to the games because they want to be able to afford the price of admission, let alone $10 hot dogs. I always look forward to Wednesdays with Jay. Your thoughts?
Great questions, and this is what I meant when I was addressing George in Sacramento.
Correct.
I would like to see these issues covered by ESPN and The Athletic, but, you know, they would never, ever do that because they would be admitting they are in trouble if they're going to start sending their best reporters to write about the demise of sports in America and the demise of this golden goose we have seen escalate over 40, 50 years in this country in professional and college sports. He is dead on the money. We are in for a reset, a cleanse of sports, and I think these owners are scared shitless right now, and so are these TV networks, Fox, ESPN. I saw Fox the other day, Dino, actually put Kevin Burkhardt, Frank Thomas, and A-Rod on some hastily aired show called 2020 MLB Preview in their homes. So they actually did a preview of the 2020 MLB season the other day. Oh, wait a minute. Do you guys know something I don't? You know why that happened, you know? The head of Fox Sports said, Jesus, we can't lose our audience. We're becoming irrelevant. Let's get our guys out there and talk about baseball. For what reason?
Jay,
glad you have smart people. Both of these letter writers are smart people. I'm glad you have people like this who listen to your show because they both get it in their own ways. And this last letter writer is completely on the mark. I told you last week about the Golden State Warriors, a friend of mine getting a call from the Warriors about tickets the other day. They're losing their ass up there. All of these leagues and franchises are about to lose their ass. They are going to have to reset prices. And that's why you're going to see these fights between players and owners about doomsday clauses in the CBA and who gets paid and who doesn't. It's going to affect salary caps. It's going to affect the MLB labor negotiations, which are fraught with peril as it is. And I don't think I am sounding any unfair alarms here. This is the real what is going on, what I am talking about right now in sports. Nobody out there seems to want to address it because the minute one of these big sports media companies does it, they piss off the leagues they're in bed with. So it's a damn good thing, folks, you have Dino Costa's show here that will air the truth. And sports definitely is in for a reawakening, if not a reckoning, in the future.
Jay, FS1, I'm not sure if you're aware of this. They, you know, there's no NASCAR, too. So the Homestead race was supposed to take place in Florida this past Sunday. Well, obviously, that's been canceled. So what did FS1 do, Jay? They put on an iRace. In other words, a simulated race. Do you know how many people watch this? People are so hard up for sports. Jay, almost a million people tuned in on FS1 for a fucking simulated race this past Sunday. And I said on my show last night, this is proof positive that there's 900,000 people in this country who've lost their fucking collective minds.
I don't believe that number.
Yes,
I'm telling you. Fox, they lie. It's Fox, for God's sake. Let's not forget, it's still the Murdoch.
Doesn't believe that number.
They run Fox Sports, too, just like they run Fox News. So let's not forget that. But yeah, Dino, I'm sure that maybe NASCAR, rather than getting guys killed in races, should go to this format anyway. Maybe they'll have a better shot at surviving in the end. Yes, people are hard up for sports, but if sports is shut down for several months, the letter writer hit it on the nose. As it is, let's take baseball. They're losing their ass in attendance because the game is boring and people don't want to sit there for 3.5 hours. Sitting, you know, it was 8-10 minutes between any sort of action. Now, don't you think with what we're about to see in this country, I hope, a cleaner world, a more careful world, a saner world with perspective. The people are going to have second thoughts as we see our economy crumble before us about spending shitloads of money at a ball game or an NBA game. Yeah, reality has struck sports here. And yes, the letter writer is absolutely right when he says they're going to have a hard time getting people back. Corporations have backed sports. Dino, corporations are going through a crisis as well. Sports has always been frivolous. It's been fun. It's been gravy for all of us. But in the middle of an all-time crisis, they're all realizing after a few weeks here of delusion and just denial that they're about to lose their ass, and it's been a fun ride for a lot of them. But now we're going to see who the real leaders are in sports, who can rebuild this. But there's going to be a lot of fussing and fighting about billions of dollars in the months ahead.
So let's get back to something we were speaking about before, Jay, and that we were talking about Brady and finishing up his career in a Buccaneers uniform. And you and I and many other people know the rest of the cast of characters that you can. I mean, Babe Ruth finishing up as a Boston Brave, and you know we referenced Namath out in Los Angeles, and that was a horror show. Johnny Yu was in financial distress at the end of his days with the Colts and needed to play another year, so he goes out to the West Coast and plays in that football card that I can't get out of my mind with Johnny Unitas in that powder blue and gold jersey with the lightning bolt on the white helmet of the San Diego Chargers, and Bobby Orr, as I mentioned, and it had been many others with Bobby Orr and many others have finished their career in uniforms that look very foreign to, you know, the halcyon days of their careers. And Brady's the latest example of that, but one that, and we talk about overstaying your welcome. And, you know, somebody said to me a long time ago, Jay, that professional athletes are not like us mere mortals. Professional athletes have two lives and we have one life. They've got two lives. And, so a lot of these guys don't know when to say goodbye. And that was the case with so many of the people that I just mentioned. When you talk about Jordan, though, and going to the Wizards, and you covered his career up close and personal in Chicago, I think he's a prime example of just not, I don't know if it was for the love of the game or because he just needed the competition, even in a declining state. But the last couple of years of watching Jordan in a Wizards uniform really did his legacy no favors. I mean, it doesn't take away from his tremendous exploits on the court all those years in Chicago, but you want to talk about a situation in which an athlete never should have gone. And Jordan, if he was going to go on for a couple more years, it only should have been in the red and black of the Chicago Bulls. But to see him in that funky looking Wizards uniform and his deteriorating play over his final couple of seasons, that was bad. That was a bad deal.
The perfect ending, right? The shot in Utah, the flick of the wrist. Yes, he did push Brian Russell a little bit.
Yeah.
The nudge. The perfect ending, though. Okay. It could have been the perfect ending, but Michael Jordan wasn't finished, and that dynasty wasn't finished. And because of what I referenced earlier, the infighting between Krause and Reinsdorf and Phil Jackson and Michael and Scottie Pippen, they declared that that would be the end of the dynasty as the season was beginning. Michael was not ready to retire. Remember, he had gone off to play baseball, so right. His body was still fresh. He had at least, I think, two or three years of championship-level dominance in him. Scottie did. They didn't want to keep the band together. I'll never forget Reinsdorf's comment, "I can't wait to create our own dynasty." Well, you have seen how that's gone the last 20 years. What a joke.
Why was he, Jay, if I can interject real quick.
He pocketed the money from the fans who couldn't get to the United Center in the 90s, and when Tim Floyd was the coach and they were winning 17 games, it was easier to get in there, but they were raising ticket prices, and damn it, he was making his profits back that he had to pay Michael and Scottie and Dennis Rodman, and he would never pay Phil Jackson what he was worth. He made him go through these protracted negotiations every summer, but I was in the middle of that Jordan Wizards thing because I got word in the summer of 2001 that Michael was starting to work out in a gym on the west side of Chicago. And I showed up one day, and sure enough, he's out there. A very young teenage LeBron James was there. There were a LeBron Artest. There were a lot of NBA players at the time that Michael was inviting to Chicago because he was making a comeback. He wasn't telling the world about it, but I'd go out there a couple times a week, and he'd see me in the parking lot, and he'd cuss at me, what are you doing here? And then he'd give me some great story. And I would say to him, didn't you have the perfect ending? And he would say, no, I still want to play. Eventually, our discussions elevated to the point where he revealed that he was pissed off that it ended the way it did. He had no control. The ultimate control freak, Michael Jeffrey Jordan, had no control over how it ended in Chicago.
Okay, let me stop you there. Let me stop you there. This is fascinating on a level, because there's a direct parallel to this in terms of, if we go to the more contemporary times, most recently, the Patriots, Brady, yep, close relationship with Kraft. Kraft, if I believe that if Brady had gone to Kraft and he had said, Bob, listen, I don't want to leave. I want to be here. And if it means we've got to bring in a new coach, so be it. Let it happen. And I think that Kraft would have done that. Okay. So they had a very close relationship over the 20 years, Kraft and Tom Brady. Why, after what Jordan did for what was really, before he arrived, a pedestrian, nondescript Chicago Bulls franchise that had no real major success until Jordan arrived? And Reinsdorf, I'm thinking, is as smart a businessman as Kraft or any other owner. Why would Reinsdorf have the undying loyalty and the unconditional love of Jerry Krause and listen to him? And why, he said he didn't, you said that Jordan told you that it didn't end the way he wanted it to in Chicago. What prevented Jordan and Reinsdorf from having that same close relationship that Kraft and Brady enjoy?
Because in the end, he's an employee. Isn't that pathetic? But in the end, ownership and management stick together, and these guys are all employees. Tom Brady is an employee. Did you hear him the last few years say, I'm an employee of the New England Patriots? He would drop that phrase every so often. Michael Jordan, you got to remember this. Michael Jordan was playing out an 8-year, $24 million contract. 8 years, $24 million. In the middle of that, Patrick Ewing, Magic Johnson, Larry Bird, some other players were having their deals renegotiated because they were obsolete, and their owners, like Jerry Buss, and understood that this is ridiculous. We need to redo their deals because this league is starting to become very successful.
Right, but Jay, you mentioned Buss.
You mentioned Buss. Got that call from Reinsdorf.
I don't understand
Reinsdorf
that.
He said he's going to stick it through, and Michael Jordan played till the 8th year of that contract. This is what I'm getting back to here. That Reinsdorf, in the end, has to be the boss. Not you, Michael Jordan, me. And I can't wait until we start our next dynasty, and I think that's Bob Kraft isn't Reinsdorf. Bob Kraft truly had an affinity for Tom Brady.
Well, he's not Jerry Buss either.
Bob Kraft is not going to send a message to other owners like Jerry Jones, oh, I'm going to let Tom Brady walk over Bill Belichick. Nope. In the end, Brady is an employee. Jordan's an employee.
Well, you talk about iconic, transcendent athletes that cross boundaries. Jordan certainly was that. Brady is that. And you say that Reinsdorf is not Bob Kraft. He wasn't Jerry Buss either. Buss and Magic remained close until the time that Buss died.
Bob Kraft could have. Evidently, Belichick is so damn stubborn, and Brady in his own way is very stubborn, that Kraft, whatever attempts he made to salvage this, simply did not work, and it's, again, almost miraculous they were able to stick it out for 20 years. These two headstrong guys couldn't last. It was different in Chicago. It was a different deal because it was, yeah, Michael Krause would say ludicrous things. Organizations win championships. Like, why would you even say that? You're the greatest athlete who ever lived, and you can't give him the proper credit. That's also a parallel here. In that sense, Krause is Belichick. Neither one could give Jordan or Brady their proper public reverence. Maybe behind the scenes, oh, come on, Tommy, I love you. But in public, Tom, just like one of the other players, he's had a fine season. And that was the sort of junk. When I first got to Chicago, the media guide had the same number of pages or just a couple of more for Michael Jordan that Bill Cartwright or John Paxson had. I wrote a column when I first got there. Why does this media guy downplay Michael Jordan? Because Krause wanted organizations to win championships. And yeah, you are right, Dino. There are certain parallels that in this, the greatest quarterback ever, the greatest basketball player ever, and how their stupid organizations, let them go. Never should have happened. The Bulls have obviously not been the same since, and I'll be very curious what happens to the New England Patriots without Brady.
Got another comment for you. This is Ken Kaprinsky. Ken Kaprinsky says, in regard to Jay's comment, you know, regarding the Golden State Warriors, let Joe know that Jay know that I received a phone call and follow-up email this week to buy season tickets for Washington State football. This while their students are not in classroom during the virus. Unreal.
Shame. This is what I'm talking about. They're in their own world in sports. And shame on us in the media. Some of us, I've tried to remain detached, but so many people, the aforementioned organizations, are so wrapped up in covering sports, they don't understand that they have become part of the mechanism, that they are part of sports. You're supposed to be covering it, not be part of it. And so in the end, they have the mentality of places even like Washington State, which I guess went through another tragedy today, so I feel for them there. But yes, no sports organization should be thinking about selling tickets right now. It's a poor reflection on their priorities. Shame on them.
Man, you knocked it out of the park again. Another great conversation this week with the one and only Jay Mariotti. You want to conclude with any thoughts?
Well, you're dead on there, Dino. I haven't thought about it to our conversation, but many parallels between how Brady left and Jordan left. And, you know, Jordan goes to Washington, and I went down there quite often for that. It was painful. He was still averaging 22, 23, but his body was bulkier. He's in midlife now. He didn't have any good players around him. It was really bad to see. It was smart of them to bring him there. Michael Jordan, just as he gentrified the west side of Chicago, gentrified what is now a booming Chinatown in D.C., where they built the arena. So Michael is fine in life. He's still the king of the sneaker world, and you saw him recently at the Kobe Bryant Memorial. You know, we'll only see so many athletes like this in our lifetime.
Yeah.
But Jordan, Brady, on the Mount Rushmore of sports in our lifetime,
sure.
And yet both kind of shabbily treated as they left their original teams.
Jay, we leave you now, but we look forward to next week, and stay safe and sound out there in Los Angeles, and I'm sure we'll communicate throughout the course of the next week until your next appearance. Always good to have you on. Have a great night.
Always fun, Dino.
Thank Thanks. You. Jay Mariotti, the one and only, every Wednesday on the show, our number two. Great stuff with him, as always. I got another donation during the conversation I had with Jay. I posted something on my Facebook page last night. I want to talk about that in light of this other contribution that came in during the course of the discussion with Jay. I'll get to that in hour number three. You want to email the show, it is dinotalkusa@gmail.com. dinotalkusa@gmail.com. 2 hours in the hopper on this midweek Wednesday, March the 25th, 2020 edition. Rendition an episode of your Dino Costa Show. It is here on the dinoshow.com. Also, they tell me we're being broadcast tonight. You fuck around with the lights one more time, we're going to have an issue. But they tell me we're broadcasting tonight on YouTube as well, which we really don't give a shit about. As long as we are on the website, baby, all is good. 2 done, 1 to go to 11 on the East Coast, 8 on the West Coast. Back with more great stuff after this. Good time, having a good time.